Trapp sat slumped in the back of a Gulfstream executive jet, his head still spinning. Beyond the low hum of the engines, there was no sound. No other passengers, no conversation, no stewards offering drinks. Just hour after hour of silence in which to contemplate his failure. He replayed Madison's final panicked words in his mind over and over.
God, Jason, what do I do?
But he had no good answer. By the time local law enforcement had arrived, Madison was long gone. The door that led from her small backyard showed signs of forced entry. Her bedroom was half destroyed. She'd fought hard, that much was clear. But in the end, she'd been overpowered.
You should have done something different, given her the tools to survive.
The fact that this was arguable, at best, didn't assuage his guilt in the slightest. Madison had been outnumbered, but he was the one who had been on the phone with her when her kidnappers came. He was the one who had failed to give her the tools to escape. The only slight consolation was that it appeared she'd been taken, not simply killed outright. Whoever had come after her wanted her for something. Information, leverage, time would tell. But that gave them an opening. It was up to them to exploit it. And yet, for the next 24 hours, he was stuck in this damn metal cylinder as he crossed half a world. A vein pulsed on the side of his temple. He felt as helpless now as he had when listening to Madison's last words to him. Perhaps more so. All he could do now was wait. Wait for the forensics reports to come back. Wait for local cops to pull traffic cameras and local CCTV. Wait for a lead, any lead. It was then that thoughts of what might be happening to her invaded his mind. Trapp had been interrogated before, beaten, tortured. Not only after he entered his nation's service, but before, when he was only a boy. It had lasted longer then. So he knew better than almost anyone else what Madison was likely experiencing. Understood the consequences that would dog her both mentally and physically for the rest of her life. She was a fighter, but every day her captivity dragged on, every passing hour would deepen that hole inside her, make it harder to ever climb back out. Which meant they needed to get her back, fast. The laptop in front of him finally came to life. His eyes snapped open. He'd been waiting for this. He pushed aside the emotional turmoil, squeezed it into a dense cube, and forgot about it. Wishing he could have done things differently didn't make it so. Madison was gone, and spinning in circles wasn't going to get her back. It was almost dawn in DC. She'd been gone for more than 6 hours, long enough for Trapp to get on a borrowed private jet, long enough for the CIA, FBI, and local law enforcement to form a task force. Intelligence officers had disappeared before, even been kidnapped, but rarely, if ever, on domestic soil. This was an affront to the entire intelligence community, and no expense or effort would be spared to get her back. The video feed of the conference room that materialized on the screen in front of him made that plain enough. Equipped with multiple screens, whiteboards, video conferencing equipment, and enough space for more than 24 participants, it put the basement space that he and Madison had been assigned just a few days earlier to shame. Trapp recognized a number of people with familiar faces in the process of sitting down. Mike Mitchell, deputy director of the Special Activities Group. Several men and women wearing uniforms that marked them out as members of the FBI's hostage rescue team, as well as many more who he either barely recognized or had never seen before.
Jason, I'm glad you could join us. Seems, it looks like you were right.
The voice belonged to Clark Richards, head of the Terrorism Analysis Desk. Flattening his palms against the table in front of him, Trapp physically restrained himself from shouting, and only because he didn't see the sense in totally derailing the meeting. Not while Madison was missing.
You didn't listen, did you? We told you we were onto something big and you shut us out. This is on you, Clark.
Now isn't the time to point fingers, Jason. We need to row together on this one. All that matters is finding Madison. And besides, I gave you both room to run on this.
Getting your excuses in early, is that it? Fine. You're right, we need to get her back. We can park our personal differences until then. But be assured I won't forget. And what do you have?
Richards hesitated for a moment, perhaps deciding whether or not to fire back. He glanced around the room and then looked back at the camera.
You've seen the photos?
A crime scene photographer had meticulously documented Madison's entire house, from the entry point to the bedroom. An image of a bloodied dumbbell ran across Trapp's mind, artificially bright from the photographer's flash. Next, he saw a black leather glove, which had been found underneath Madison's bed, and her phone. Its screen was lit in the first of the pictures. It had 3 missed calls from a contact identified only as Jay. He remembered waiting helplessly for an answer that never came.
I have. Are the prints back on the dumbbell? What about DNA on the blood?
Not long. We put a rush on it.
No shit.
What did she say, Jason?
Mitchell apparently recognized that the current relationship between Richards and Trapp was too fiery to be productive.
There were 2 of them. At least 2. She dropped the phone once they burst into the room. I couldn't hear much after that, just scuffling, fighting. A man's voice, but only...
Any accent?
Trapp closed his eyes and tried to remember. He shook his head with frustration.
No, I don't know. It was too indistinct. Where are you with the traffic cams?
We got analysts going through every second of footage from the area, but there's a lot of it. Half the local residents have doorbell cams. Add that to cameras at local retail outlets. We're talking about days worth of footage.
Then get everybody in the whole damn agency out of bed. Go door to door if you have to. It's been 6 hours now. Every minute we waste...
Everybody knew the stakes.
We are, Jason, but it's gonna take time.
Damn it. Where the hell are those fingerprints? You need to cross-reference them against every prisoner database we have from Afghanistan, Syria, and Iraq. Al-Shakiri's working with people he trusts. They might have come across our radar before.
We're on it, Jason.
Trapp tried to think. Madison had been smart. He had no way of proving it, but he was sure that she'd intentionally snatched off her assailant's glove in a desperate attempt to help law enforcement identify him. She must have known her capture was inevitable.
Trapp, what were you chasing out in Indonesia? If the perpetrators were willing to go to the lengths of kidnapping a CIA officer to achieve their goals, we have to assume an attack is likely.
Our working theory was that Al-Shakiri had put together a cell which aimed to attack passenger jets.
How?
Madison found evidence that before its fall back in 2017, ISIS was working on building a surface-to-air missile. That's a low-confidence estimate. But she found a connection between a North Korean arms manufacturer and the Islamic State that might have involved supplying missile seeker heads. The intelligence is unclear. You need to get that to the FAA immediately.
To what end? You're right, this intel is inconclusive at best. We can't exactly ask them to shut down domestic and international air travel on the basis of your hunch. Besides, this was all a long time ago.
Trapp glowered back at him.
It's not a fucking hunch. The site I took down with the Indonesians was being used as some kind of test facility. The Indonesian Air Force picked up radar contact nearly 2 days ago now. I think they were testing their missile. If I'm right, we don't have long.
They sent us the data. Our people have reviewed it, and analysts at NORAD gave a second opinion. It's no more conclusive than the rest of it. For all we know, it was a flock of birds. Hell, it might be nothing at all. Indonesian radar coverage isn't designed to cover the interior. Might have just been a glitch.
Do you believe in coincidences, Clark? Do you think it was just a freak accident that following the trail of the so-called glitch led us to Al-Shakiri's hideout? Because if that's right, you're even more incompetent than I thought.
This isn't getting us anywhere.
You're damn right it's not!
Trapp's frustration with being trapped in the Gulf Stream and thousands of miles from the action surged out of him.
We need to be focused on saving Madison, Mike, not dicking around with this moron.
And we are, Jason. You said it yourself. The same people behind this plot are the ones who took her. Getting to the bottom of what they're planning is the only way of finding her. You've been on this longer than anyone. You might know something that we don't, so help us out. We need all the details, anything. Even the most insignificant sounding piece of information might be the thing that cracks this whole thing wide open. Did you two have any other leads? Was there anything that might have precipitated this attack? We need to know why it happened, and why now, before we have any chance of figuring out where they might have taken her.
No.
He consciously forced himself to relax. Much as he hated the idea of giving Richards what he wanted, Mitchell was right. They needed to work as a team. He couldn't do it alone, especially not from here.
Wait. She was hunting down some of Al-Shakiri's known associates. 2 of them disappeared from Turkey a couple of weeks back. The Turks either didn't know where they were or weren't sharing. It was probably a dead end, but Madison was trying to breathe some life into it.
Richards and Mitchell exchanged glances, as did several of the personnel behind them.
Jason, you haven't heard?
Heard what?
An employee of the Turkish embassy was murdered last night on his way home from the office. He was working late. Someone put 3 rounds through his back. The embassy hasn't yet released the name, but we believe he is, or was, Errol Aksoy, deputy chief of station for Turkish intelligence here in D.C.
God damn it. Mike, you need to put the screws on the Turks. There was a reason this guy was killed. Finding out what it is will be how we get her back.
This is going to be a delicate situation. Once the press finds out a diplomat was murdered, it'll be front page news. If a reporter gets so much as a sniff of the fact that he was an intelligence agent, it'll lead every news bulletin from here to Jakarta. We're going to have to tread carefully. Besides, we have time. If, and I repeat, if this terrorist was building a missile over there in Indonesia, it'll take a month to ship it stateside. Probably more like 2. There's no sense in treading heavily and attracting press attention than watching every lead we have go to ground.
You never heard of airplanes, Clark?
Trapp felt a flash of satisfaction at the look this drew.
Mike, do what I said, okay? Get the Turks to reveal what they're hiding. They should want revenge as badly as we do. And we don't have time, whatever this goon says. If the terrorists went to the lengths of kidnapping Madison, then their endgame must be close. We don't have 2 months. We might not even have 2 days.
A searing cold broke through Madison's unconsciousness, bringing with it a startling clarity, like an early morning ice swimmer washing away the thickness of night. She was soaking wet and...
naked?
She could feel cool air kissing the inside of her thighs, her bare stomach, and the nape of her neck, and the way individual droplets of water beaded on her skin. The way one joined a second, then a third, before the trio lost their battle with gravity and trickled to the seat underneath. The information about her seated position came as a revelation. Had she fallen asleep at her desk? She'd been working long hours recently, though she could not yet remember why. But that clearly made no sense. She wouldn't be naked at work. Something else was happening here. She strained to remember what, battling against a body that seemed predisposed to fight her every wish. Why wasn't it reacting to her commands? She just wanted to raise her chin, to look up, and work out what the hell was happening. Still, her eyes stayed closed, as though pulled down by leaden weights. She heard raised, angry voices in the background, bringing to mind memories of listening to her parents quarrel as a young child. Except this was different. She heard 2 men arguing. Was it over her?
Have I done something wrong?
Her brain went into overdrive, usually so adept at matching patterns, but not this time. She was working with too little information. If only she could lift her chin, open her eyes. Something about the tone of the argument gave Madison pause as she felt the glue attaching her eyelids together begin to loosen. A door opened. She could have opened her eyes, but didn't. Not yet. They sounded so unhinged that she held back, just for a moment.
How the fuck was I supposed to know it was different? I followed the instructions from the internet, just like I was supposed to.
We stole it from a vet, dumbass! You didn't stop to think the dose for a horse and a human might not be the same? Look at the bitch! It's been a day and she's still barely breathing! What if she doesn't wake up?
I'm the dumbass? I didn't allow myself to get knocked out by a 5-foot-nothing pencil pusher, okay? You were supposed to inject her anyway. I did what I had to get us both out of there before the cops arrived. A little bit of thanks would be nice.
You think the boss is going to thank either of us for putting her into a coma?
A short silence gave Madison an opportunity to process what she'd just heard. Cold sliced through her, tinged with fear. It was freezing in here, wherever she was. She could feel herself beginning to tremble, but the prickling at the back of her neck wasn't a reaction to the temperature. She was terrified. Strangely, Jason's face swam into her mind's eye at that moment. He didn't say a word, though she desperately wanted him to, but simply met her gaze with steely determination. She seized upon it, resolving not to give in to her panic. It wouldn't get her anywhere. Instead, she needed answers. First on the list, why was she so damn cold?
Well, what the fuck do we do?
Madison began to analyze the sounds around her, her brain falling into patterns she'd chiseled into it over the course of years. The act helped to calm her. The voice sounded American, which surprised her. The accent was difficult to place.
Get some more ice. She moaned when we tossed the last bucket over her. Nearly woke her up.
What if it was just a monkey brain?
What the hell are you talking about?
Well, I read a book once. You know, you still blink if you slip into a coma. Some people even react to pain. Doesn't mean there's anything left of their mind. Just a hunk of nerve cells following old programs.
You think too much. But hell, if you want to explain that bullshit to the boss, be my guest.
Madison flinched with excitement. They had tossed a pail of ice water over her. It explained why she was dripping wet and freezing cold. But why soak her? What purpose could that serve?
They were trying to wake me up. Why? Because I was unconscious. They drugged me.
Instead of provoking another hit of adrenaline, the thought momentarily stunned her. She remembered now, could picture the two men breaking through the bedroom door, hitting one of them, apparently not hard enough to put him down permanently, then failing to break free of his partner. As the wave of revelations washed over her, Madison almost didn't hear the footsteps. She felt body heat radiating against her frozen skin as one of the two men approached. She willed herself to be silent, not to react. What was he going to do? The reality of her nakedness brought a lump of terror to her throat. She was so tired. Could she fight him off if it came to it? And then he was on her. Her kidnapper roughly pulled open her left eyelid and stared inside. The sudden rush of bright light burned her retina. She almost pulled back, as much from the shock of the rough treatment as from the unexpected pain. But somehow she mastered the urge, perhaps aided by the drug still running through her system. She willed herself not to react.
I think I got something.
He was peering at her, so close that his two eyes had formed one hole. All she could see through her unfocused pupils was a blur. He was Caucasian, she thought, a little on the chubby side.
What is it? She awake?
The first man pinched her cheek roughly. He pulled and twisted, searching for a reaction. Madison somehow forced herself to breathe slowly and steadily to avoid giving her captor the reaction he was probing for. He twisted harder, then gave up in disgust.
Nothing. Just that monkey brain of yours. Fucking bitch. Like I said, let's get some more ice.
The two men stomped away. Madison waited a few seconds until she was sure that it wasn't a trick, that they weren't secretly looking back to see if she moved, then haltingly inched her eyelids open. She looked out through a forest of eyelashes, not daring to push it any further. It took her eyes a few moments to adjust. She was in, what, a barn? A farmhouse, maybe. Her slumped position, chin on her chest, meant that she was staring at the floor. She took in the dusty flagstones, speckled with stalks and clumps of cut, dried grass. A few feet away, the legs of a wooden dining table rose from the floor. Unable to look up any further without moving her head, and unsure whether she would be capable of doing so in any case, Madison surveyed her own body next. A wave of relief washed over her as she realized she wasn't naked, just stripped to her underwear. She wasn't sure why the revelation brought so much comfort, since she was almost totally exposed in any case.
I guess they haven't touched me.
She suppressed a shudder at the thought, but she couldn't focus on that for now. It was clear she was a captive. She could feel the plastic cuffs biting into her wrists and ankles. She had a brief window of opportunity as her kidnappers left to get ice, but there was no way of knowing how long it would last. She needed to make every second count. She lifted her chin, a quarter of an inch at a time, until she could see the whole room in front of her. It was a farmhouse, that was for sure. An old colonial-style one, with an interior design that might have been modern in the 60s, but not since. This room was the kitchen. Some of the counters were swathed in faded tarpaulins, and, in the background, she thought she detected the low hum of a diesel generator. That was good news, she decided. Construction this old was mainly confined to the Northeast. It also seemed likely, given the appliances and electricity sockets she saw, that she was still in the United States. For whatever reason, the thought comforted her, despite the fact that she was still in tremendous danger. She slowly rotated her head, taking in the rest of the space, listening intently for any sign that her captors were returning. As yet, she heard nothing. Most of the building's windows were boarded up, though a few of the planks used to do so had come loose, allowing chinks of light inside. An abandoned farmhouse, then. Perhaps on the market, but for a considerable length of time, judging by the level of decay. She cataloged every detail, not knowing which would matter and which wouldn't, and not wanting to be caught out later on. Just a few feet to her left was a kitchen counter. There was no skirting board along the floor, and she could see a rusted and thankfully empty mousetrap peeking out from underneath. She turned her neck back to the right. Finally, the table came into view. There was barely a square inch of its surface that wasn't covered in detritus. Madison's eyes passed over brown paper bags bearing logos of McDonald's and Burger King, among other fast food joints. Just the sight of them made her empty stomach rumble. How long had it been since she'd eaten? She'd heard one of the men say she'd been out for a whole day. Her body reminded her of that fact now. A wave of nausea passed through her. She fought it off. Madison squinted as she tried to make out the other items on the table. Her eyes were still blurry from the drugs and probably the after effects of a full day of unconsciousness. What were they?
Cell phones!
Her eyes shot wide open with sudden excitement. There had to be almost a dozen burner phones lying on that dining table. If she could only reach one, she'd be able to call 911. The operator would be able to trace the phone signal.
Shit!
She came back down to Earth with a bump as the reality of her predicament struck home. She was still bound to this damn chair. Unless she could somehow free herself in the next few seconds while her kidnappers were gone from the room, then the phones were nothing more than a temptation. A scraping noise echoed through the farmhouse, causing her ears to pick up. She held herself completely still for a moment until she was sure that it didn't presage their immediate return. She fought off a growing sensation of despair. She couldn't, wouldn't, allow herself to give up now. Madison jerked her arm back to test her restraints, but the movement was met with unceremonious failure. Her wrists were bound tight, one to either side of the chair. She ran the same test with her ankles a moment later. This time, she realized that here there was a little more play. The soles of her feet were flat against the floor. If she pushed upward, she was able to make the chair rock, even move it an inch or so. She was only a few feet from the table. Maybe there was a way she could push herself toward it. There had to be something over there that she could use to cut herself free. She couldn't see any obvious signs of weapons left around her, but perhaps a door had been left open. Failing that, a window.
I'll crawl through a damn sewer if that's what it takes.
Madison started to push, wincing at the short, shrill squeals that echoed through the kitchen as the chair legs scraped across the stone floor. She tried again, managing to push herself a full 3 inches, only to almost tumble over as one of the feet caught against an exposed spur. She dug her heels against the ground to steady herself, eyes wide with tension at the prospect of being caught.
Easy.
She tried again, rocking the chair instead of pushing it. It was quieter that way. 4 inches, then 3, a full 5. She pushed until her toes started to burn with lactic acid buildup and the arches of her feet cramped from the unaccustomed effort. She was more used to rolling her wheeled office chair a few feet to pour a fresh cup of coffee or check out a nearby computer screen than she was to this. The drugs they'd pumped into her, she guessed ketamine from the overheard description, had left her limbs like jelly. But she didn't give up.
Come on!
Her heart raced as she made it halfway to the table and kept going. Finally, she made it. Her lungs pounded from exertion, as though she'd sprinted a full mile rather than pushed herself a handful of feet. The table was now right beside her. Instinctively, Madison tried lifting her right hand, only to be brought up short by the restraints around her wrists. She bit her lower lip and turned her head to the side with impotent fury. She cursed the narcotic hangover dogging her thoughts. The burner phones were only a few inches away. How could she not have considered how she would actually pick one up before going to all this effort? The reality of her near nakedness reared its head once again. Even if she managed to acquire one of those cell phones, she had nowhere to hide it. Her kidnappers were already perverted enough to strip her down to her underwear and would surely notice if she somehow grew what would look like a male appendage while they were gone.
How would you get it there anyway?
Madison ground her jaw shut. She could figure out the details later. None of them would matter unless she managed to clear the first hurdle. She closed her eyes and urged herself to think, absent-mindedly extending her hearing as far as it would go. Still, she heard nothing, no sign that her kidnapper's return was imminent. But the reprieve could not last long.
Think!
She tugged at her zip cuffs until the pain of the plastic ties cutting into the flesh at her wrists was almost unbearable. A tear formed in the corner of one eye as she yanked again. She tried pulling it upward instead of to the side, but this only succeeded in nearly dislocating her right shoulder. There was no way she could get enough leverage to break the tight cuffs. Madison tried to figure out what had just occurred to her. Her shoulder. What about it? It had risen up when she tugged. Unless her arm was made of elastic, that meant the cuff had to have slid up the wooden uprights that made up the back of the chair. But what good was that to her? Finally, it struck her. If she pulled her right wrist up as far as it would go, until her shoulder almost cramped from the contorted position she was forcing it into, then she could bring her right elbow out. It would only give her a few inches of reach, at most a foot, but that might be enough. Footsteps. Madison blanched with fear. What would they do to her if they discovered what she was doing? They surely wouldn't leave her unguarded again. This was her only chance. No time to think. She pulled her right wrist up until the elbow stuck out over the dining table. With her full weight, she rocked to the right. The chair would have fallen over without the table in the way. She rested her elbow on it, leaning on the chair's two right legs. The cell phone was just an inch or two away from the point of her elbow. If she only reached...
Come on!
Gritting her teeth, she pushed her elbow out a little farther, ignoring the pain in her shoulder. At long last, she touched the cool plastic of the cheap burner. She stopped dead, despite every neuron in her brain urging speed upon her. She was only going to get one shot at this. Lifting her shoulder until tears leaked from her eyes from the pain, she managed to bring the elbow up and over the cell phone. As soon as it came to rest on the device, she dragged it toward her, toward the edge of the table. It fell onto her lap.
Shit! Now what do I do?
Madison acted on instinct. Her eyes glanced to the left in search of somewhere to hide it and settled on the mousetrap underneath the kitchen counters. She tilted the chair forward, pushing against the table with her elbow for leverage, straining until the burner began to slide. It toppled to the floor, thankfully coming to rest right by the tip of her big toe. She could hear voices now. Her kidnappers had to be in the next room. No time. She brought her foot back as far as possible, tensed her thigh, and kicked out. She didn't wait to see what happened to it before she threw herself with all her strength to the left, away from the dining table, away from the evidence of what she had done. Her head thumped against the hard stone floor. Her vision flashed white. She heard running footsteps as the two men urgently entered the kitchen in search of the commotion she'd caused. But as they roughly wrestled her back up, her eyes settled on only one thing, the phone, nestled in the darkness right where she'd aimed it. Trap bounded down the staircase that had unfolded from the Gulfstream side, fueled by a burning frustration that came of having been cooped up for over 24 hours while a manhunt proceeded without him.
We're making a habit out of this, Jason.
He looked up to see Special Agent Nick Pope, an agent from the FBI's Counterintelligence Division. In many ways, the two men were much alike. Military backgrounds, similar build, almost identical height. Pope was leaning against a Chevrolet Suburban with tinted windows and government plates.
What are you doing here, Nick?
Trapp's throat was husky from the dry air on board. The aircraft's pilots joined him on the asphalt.
I don't need a babysitter.
You sure about that?
The co-pilot shot him an exhausted, irritated look as they passed.
I appreciate the ride, gentlemen. Let's not make it a habit.
What was that about?
Comm setup died about halfway through.
And let me guess, you were in the cockpit every 30 seconds asking for an update on the world's longest flight. Way to make enemies and alienate people, Jason.
Can it? And I meant it about the babysitting. I'm good.
I know you are, Jason. Unfortunately, the United States is a country of laws, and they say you don't get to operate on your own, not stateside. Besides, You don't have a badge.
He glanced across the center console at Trap.
Not a legal one anyway. I can help, and you don't have a choice.
Trap decided to pick his battles. He knew and liked Pope, and decided the man could be useful.
Fine. What's the latest?
The FBI agent took no offense from Trap's tone, either inoculated by previous exposure, or willing to cut him some slack due to the circumstances. Or maybe he just didn't care.
We put a name to those prints. Nothing on the DNA yet. We're running a familial match search using the commercial databases to see if it lines up with our suspect, but that will take time.
Any sign of him?
His name's Ricky Cobb, 32 years old, native of the District of
Columbia. You're shitting me. He's American?
Born and bred. We got a search warrant for his apartment. He's gone.
Tell me about him.
Nothing much to tell. Oh, except he got kicked out of high school for writing a manifesto and bringing his dad's 22 to show and tell.
They have show and tell at high school?
Well, he certainly wanted to talk about it. There's hours of interrogation tapes from back then. We pulled him out of cold storage. Kid's a real creep. Dead behind the eyes, you know?
What was the manifesto about?
Usual shit. Jews this, tentacles that. Wrote about how he fantasized about executing every girl in his freshman class for not giving him the time of day.
As he glanced up at the rearview mirror, his expression betrayed how disturbed he was by what he'd read.
He wrote the same thing over and over, only changing the name each time. I push Rebecca to the wall, I pull the trigger, and she falls. Rinse and repeat.
Shit. How do you think he got mixed up in this? It's not exactly my area of expertise, but the incel crowd usually lean more to white nationalism and Christian fundamentalism, don't they?
Usually. Garden variety nutbags like him are primed for radicalization. Guess he got reading a different set of forums and chose Islamic fundamentalism. He was listed several times in surveillance records after attending Friday prayers at radical mosques in the late aughts. Nothing actionable, and nothing we could do about it at the time. Ricky gets freedom of assembly just like every other red-blooded American. But get this, in 2014, he books a vacation to Turkey, then drops off the radar completely. No tax records, no bank transactions, not even a cell phone plan during that time. Then he pops back up 4 years later, slots back into life like he never left. Except this time, he's a model citizen, doesn't visit the mosque, lives with his mom, holds down a steady job.
Girlfriend?
None that we've been able to identify. Neighbors have never seen him with a woman. We subpoenaed the social media companies to get access to his accounts. No messages to or from any females that stick out. Though the kid has spent an ungodly, and I mean ungodly, amount of time browsing women's Instagram profiles, usually the young and suggestively clothed kind.
Trap fought against the exhaustion tugging at his eyelids. Despite being cut out of the loop on board the jet for the past 12 hours, he'd found himself unable to sleep. Now, that unforced error was making him sluggish.
Okay. So we've got a sexually repressed, 32-year-old Caucasian male with Islamic fundamentalist tendencies and an American passport. He most likely joined up with the Islamic State in Syria back in 2014, then slipped back across the border to lie in wait.
Pope nodded grimly as he overtook a school bus.
They trained him up, kept him off the radar until he was ready, and then they sent him back.
And he's been kicking up his heels all this time, not putting a foot out of place, doing nothing to attract law enforcement's attention. Until now.
That's what we're thinking, Jason. If they've waited until now to activate him, whatever they're planning must be big.
Trap fell silent as he mulled the thought over in his mind. Then he changed tack.
What about the Turks? Do we have anything from them yet?
Nothing. The director called the head of the MIT personally. But from what I hear, it was like talking to a brick wall. We're not exactly in their good books at the moment with the whole F-35 thing. Maybe they have something to share, maybe they don't. But I don't think they intend to, no matter how politely we ask.
Oh, they know. Anyone tell them the consequences of holding out on intelligence that leads to a major terrorist attack on U.S. soil?
They've been read the Riot Act. Didn't do a damn bit of good.
There must be something else. Every second we sit on our hands, Madison's chances of survival get lower.
We're not sitting on our hands, Jason. The CIA is on this. Practically every bureau agent in the tri-state area has had their leave revoked. We are working night and day to get her back.
But we don't have any leads, do we?
No.
Then we need to shake things up. Go on the offense.
You got any ideas?
Tell me about the suspect. Rick, what do we know about him?
And the profilers say he's likely unstable. His parents took him to a variety of therapists and psychiatrists in his teens. He never engaged with any of them long enough to come up with a diagnosis. From what we hear, they all agreed there was something wrong with him. They just couldn't agree on what.
His parents are still alive?
His mom is. Dad died 3 years ago of a heart attack.
They close?
Before he disappeared? No. They drifted apart. His pops was former Navy. Didn't like the idea of his only son converting to Islam. Made that opinion real clear. Drove a wedge into their relationship. But after he returned from, for argument's sake, Syria, he reestablished contact with mom. Never said where he went, but she speaks the world of him.
Trapp felt a glimmer of excitement ignite in his gut. Finally, something he could work with.
Then let's turn that to our advantage.
Madison looked up warily, the taste of copper on her tongue. The mere act of blinking now caused sharp spikes of pain to travel up the nerve endings in her face. Blood pooled in her mouth. There had to be a cut inside her lip somewhere, given to her by one of her interrogators. She played her tongue across the fragile flesh until she found it. It was nothing she could do to stem the flow. She waited until she had half a mouthful of the liquid, then spat it out of the side of her mouth.
You're disgusting. Look at you.
I can't.
She knew that she shouldn't bait them, and yet she was unable to resist.
Unless you untie me.
Shut up! Tell me why you were meeting Errol Axoy. I won't ask again.
Madison resisted the urge to remind him that he'd instructed her to be silent. Maybe she was learning. After all, they'd only been working her over for what, 3 hours now? She had no way of knowing exactly. All she knew was that everything hurt. In a way, she was glad she couldn't see herself in the mirror. She could feel what her face must look like, bloodied and bruised and puffy. She wasn't sure how much of this she could take.
We're friends. We've been over this, I told you. We met at a conference about extremist radicalization 4 years ago. We kept in touch ever since. Sometimes he has something useful for me, sometimes...
She fell silent, realizing she'd made a mistake. These men already knew who she was. They'd taken her agency credentials from her bedside table, along with the files she'd been rifling through. After that, she hadn't seen much point in hiding the identity of her employer. But now she had stupidly drawn a link between her profession and their precise question. She quickly glanced between the two men. One was darker than the other and a touch taller, perhaps half Somali, though that was only an educated guess. He was the one asking most of the questions. The Caucasian terrorist spoke little and seemed less sure of himself. If only there was a way of separating them. She was sure she could work on him.
Sometimes we just meet for coffee.
She hoped she hadn't left too long a gap in her speech.
And that is all we were doing yesterday, or the other day, whenever you took me.
Madison focused her attention on the smaller Caucasian man, matching his gaze without making it too obvious. She spoke in an almost motherly tone, hating the need to do so, but doing it anyway. Her bloodied cheeks ached with every word.
Listen, I don't know who you guys are or what you want. And I won't lie to you, you're gonna do some prison time for this. 2 years, maybe. But if you turn yourselves in now, I'll intercede on your behalf. Write a letter of recommendation to the prosecutor. You'll get out after a year. I'll make sure you don't get put in with the animals.
She sensed the other kidnapper opening his mouth to speak.
But if you let this drag on much longer, there won't be anything I can do to help. If you're lucky, you'll get stuck in solitary and slowly lose your mind. And if you're not, well, I don't envy the kind of things you'll see in maximum security. Or the people you'll meet.
A hard, painful slap collided with her cheek and whiplashed her neck hard to the right.
Shut up, bitch. What makes you think you have any right to speak to us like that? Like you're better than us?
A flash of utter rage burned Madison from the inside. She vowed that if she survived this, she'd make sure that one went away for a very long time. Preferably somewhere where he didn't get the benefit of natural light until he was pushing 70 years old. But she focused instead on his quiet partner.
It's not too late.
Elizabeth Cobb?
A gray-haired woman had pulled open her front door, the latch chain pulled taut. She peered out of the 2-inch gap, her face lined and deep bags underneath her eyes. She didn't look like she'd slept through the night.
Are you the police? I already told you everything I know. I don't know where my boy is.
Pope flashed his badge as Trapp lingered behind, casing the modest home for anything that might have been missed. The window frames needed replacing, and the small patch of grass in the front yard hadn't been cut in weeks. The whole place needed a fresh lick of paint, but in that it was no different from most of the homes on the street. It was a modest, working-class neighborhood.
FBI, ma'am. We just have a few further questions. Can we come in?
Trapp walked a few paces down the small front porch and casually peered in the window.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not sure I have anything more to say.
Trapp decided that he'd had enough playing nice. He strode to the front door.
Ma'am, it would be best if you let us come in and...
Mrs. Cobb, has anyone explained to you what your son has gotten himself mixed up in?
She touched her throat, eyes widening at the sudden shift in tone, then shook her head.
Not exactly.
He kidnapped a federal agent. It's our belief that he is working with ISIS to pull off a major attack on American soil.
Oh, Ricky! I don't believe it.
You'd better start. Mrs. Cobb, your boy went to Syria to fight with the Islamic State. We don't know exactly what he got up to when he was there, but you can be assured it wasn't good. We have fingerprint evidence placing him at the crime scene. There's no doubt about this.
Mrs. Cobb took an involuntary step back.
I don't know. Maybe I need a lawyer.
Here's how this is going to play out. I'm going to find where Ricky is hiding out, and I'm going to put a bullet through his forehead. I won't lose any sleep over taking him down, you understand?
Jason, why don't...
So you have two choices, Mrs. Cobb. Get your lawyer, do whatever they tell you to do to try to keep your boy out of prison.
Jason.
Only to bury him when I'm done with him. Or work with me. Help us find your son, Mrs. Cobb. And I promise you I will do whatever I can to keep him alive. He's going to go to prison for a very long time, but it's better than ending up in a box.
He fell silent, but stared expectantly at the trembling woman, his gaze unmoving and unmoved. Pope fell silent, clearly sensing that the approach might be bearing fruit.
I can't. I don't know how to help you. I don't know where he is. He doesn't tell me anything, hasn't in a long time. And even if I did know, how could I?
What do you mean, Mrs. Cobb?
What if I do something to help you somehow, and it gets him killed anyway? I don't care what he's done. He's still my child. I would never be able to live with myself.
Her trembling became more intense, and tears ran down her cheeks. She reached out and gripped the doorframe and clung to it as if it was the only thing keeping her upright.
Elizabeth, if you don't help me, you might as well sign Ricky's death warrant. If he goes through with what these terrorists are planning, hundreds of innocent Americans are going to die. If that happens, I assure you that every cop and federal agent in the country is going to have him in their sights. He'll be enemy number one, and they won't stop until they get their man.
She became ashen-faced as every word of Trapp's verbal assault crashed down around her, closing her eyes as she pictured the death of her only son.
But if you help us find him, I can protect him. There are no guarantees in this world, but I promise I will do my utmost to keep him safe. This is your only play, Mrs. Cobb. It's the best deal you're gonna get. So what's it gonna be?
Elizabeth's eyes were full of tears.
Okay, I'll do what you want. You have to promise to help him. He's a good boy, I know that. I don't know how he got himself mixed up in this. You need to keep him safe.
I promise.
But I don't understand what it is you think I know. I don't know where he is. I told you already, he doesn't share things with me. Maybe he doesn't trust me. Maybe he never did.
I know you don't know where he is, Mrs. Cobb. What I want is for you to film an appeal. I want him to see what he's costing you and what he might cost himself.
Madison was still in the kitchen of the farmhouse where she'd been ever since she woke up, and her two captors were eating as they watched a news program on the television with the sound off.
I'm hungry.
Madison winced as even the slightest movements pulled at the scabs on her split lip and made the bruises that littered her face smart with agony. She wanted a bite as badly as she had ever wanted anything in her life. It felt like days since they'd fed her last. Maybe it had been. She was so exhausted she could barely lift her chin from her chest. Her shoulders had long ago given up protesting the contorted position they'd been forced into and had now gone numb.
Give us something then, and it's all yours. Just tell us what you were doing with the Turkish spy.
We've been over this. He's a friend.
And I already said, I don't believe you.
Her captor grinned manically before taking a large bite of his sandwich. He held eye contact with Madison as he chewed and swallowed.
Asshole.
She decided to nickname him Greedy from now on. Her stomach rumbled. She returned her gaze to the floor, knowing it was hopeless. At least they weren't beating her any longer. That had stopped earlier that day. They appeared to have shifted to a new tactic, denying her food and water, and even adequate bathroom opportunities.
Hey, turn that shit up!
Madison looked up to see that all color had drained from his complexion.
That's my mom!
What are you talking about?
It's my mom! That's her front door!
He pointed at the television screen.
Fuck! They must be onto us!
We knew this would happen. It was only a matter of time.
His buddy jumped up off the chair and punched the volume buttons on the underside of the old television screen.
There has been a further development in the case today, as federal agents question the mother of one of the suspects.
You don't understand, man. They know my name.
A fresh line of text flashed up on the news chyron. It read, "Wanted for questioning, Rick Cobb."
What did you think was going to happen? We both agreed to do whatever it takes. This country is sick. It needs to be cleansed.
Yeah.
The other man seemed to be wavering.
But they know my name. Wait, there she is.
Madison kept extremely still, moving only her eyes as she focused on the television screen. The last thing she needed right now was for her captors to remember that she was still in the room. This was the kind of moment she'd been hoping to engineer.
Ricky, if you're listening to this, please just come home.
The sight of this gray-haired woman caused the Caucasian terrorist to blanch.
I don't care what you've done. I just want you to be safe.
The camera focused on the woman retreating into her home, the door closing behind her as camera flashes ricocheted off the paint before the feed switched back to the anchor.
Authorities aren't saying exactly what Cobb is accused of, but they repeat that he is to be considered armed and highly dangerous. The FBI task force hunting him down has set up a tip line, now seen at the bottom of your screen. If you have any information at all, don't hesitate to give them a call. Now let's get to Jamie with the weather.
There's no turning back now, Rick. They know who you are. You'll spend the rest of your life behind bars. You want that? Me? I want to die. Paradise sounds a whole lot better than the life I got.
Madison now knew his name. That was something she could work with. And the terrorist's mother had called him Ricky. She needed to get a moment alone with him to appeal to whatever was left of his conscience, even his soul. If she did, which name should she use? It was a tough choice. She wanted to play on his childhood memories, use them to her advantage without making it obvious what she was doing. Frustration flickered inside her. Ricky was hesitating, and Greedy knew it. She needed to separate them, but try as she might to rack her brain to figure out how, she was coming up dry. For now, she concentrated on memorizing the tip line number that had popped up on the screen. For half a second, she allowed her eyes to flash back to the cell phone's hiding place on the floor. So close, yet so far. She might as well be separated from it by the Grand Canyon. They almost never left her alone long enough to get it.
Who says we get to die? They don't tell us shit. We gotta find this place. Mow the fucking lawn. What's that about? That worth dying over?
Trust the plan, Rick. The boss didn't do all this for nothing. You know what he's like. You remember, don't you?
Yeah.
Ricky grew quieter. He squeezed his eyes shut and swayed as if a memory was coming to the front of his mind.
I guess you're right.
You know I am.
Greedy grinned and slapped Rick on the back.
Besides, the boss will be here any day now. We're in the endgame. Have faith, brother.
I guess. I just wish I knew what it was.